We know how to do both monohybrid and dihybrid crosses. Okay, the dihybrid crosses are probably the most difficult type of a genetic problem we're going to have on the test. So we're not going to get into real complicated genetics. All right. However, we're going to talk about some other anomalies or some other different types of genetics problems. Last time we ended up talking about multiple alleles where there can actually be more than one dominant allele per, for example, incomplete dominance. We said that sometimes you can have multiple dominant alleles and multiple recessive alleles. I want to talk about one example of that type of a situation that occurs in the human body, and that occurs with blood typing. Who knows their blood type in here? Okay, Kelton?
What is it? I'm O positive.
Okay, O positive is what he says. Actually, he gave me two pieces of information there. He gave me his blood type and his Rh factor. Okay, his blood type is O. All right, so the positive negative part of it is actually a completely different genetics problem. You can actually do them as a dihybrid problem, but it's a completely different genetics problem. But, so we have blood type O. What other types of blood types are there? Okay, there's A. What else?
B.
B, and what else?
AB.
AB. Okay. So, in other words, we have more than just two genes or two alleles that govern blood type, right? Okay. If there are only two alleles that govern blood type, how many different phenotypes could we have? Because these are really phenotypes, right? That's the phenotype. How many different phenotypes could we have if there were just two different alleles?
Two.
Two, okay. So in human blood typing, we actually have three different alleles, all right? There is the dominant A allele, there's the dominant B allele, and both of those are dominant, okay? And then we have a recessive allele, which is sometimes called little I. And why they call it little I, I don't know, okay? But that's generally how textbooks look at the recessive allele in blood typing. Alright? So if those are the possible alleles that we can have with blood type, what are the possible genotypes for someone with a phenotype of blood type A?
AA.
Okay, they could have either big A, or what?
Big A,
little I, right? Both of those would yield A blood type, correct? Okay. What would be the possible genotypes for a person with B phenotype blood?
BBBN.
Okay, so big B, big B, and big B, little I, right? Okay. What about a person with AB blood type? What would they have?
AB.
They would have AB genotype as well, okay? So this is kind of, this is an example of incomplete dominance, so it would be something like the pink flower or wavy hair that we talked about, okay? What about a person with blood type O? What do you think their genotype is going to be?
Double I.
It's going to be homozygous recessive, okay? So Mr. Steck has homozygous recessive blood type, all right? Now, if you knew a person's phenotype, could you, well, if you knew two people's phenotypes, or genotypes, I should say, could you predict what type of blood they're offspring should have? Sure you could, right? In other words, if a person had blood type AI and they crossed with a person with blood type B that was BI, what types of blood types could their children have? Yeah, they could actually have a child with any type of blood type, right? So their children could be of any blood type. And this is actually until DNA was kind of an accepted science, which wasn't that long ago, believe it or not, less than 10 years ago. This is one of the ways that they would establish potential paternity and paternity suits. So if a lady said, come along and said, I think this person's the father of my child or whatever, what they would do is they would actually do blood testing, and that would, with blood testing, you can eliminate potential fathers, but you can't conclude that a person was the father. Does that make sense? In other words, if a female had blood type of big A, okay, and the person that she crossed with, or she claimed that she crossed with, had blood type of B, big B, if the potential child, for example, had blood type O, could he, or actually wouldn't have blood type O, if the child had blood type A, could he be the father of that child? No. Even, let's say, kind of change things here, let's say she was heterozygous for A, if she had a child that was O blood type, could he be the father?
No.
He couldn't. Okay. Does that make sense? So you could actually eliminate individuals, but you couldn't conclude that an individual was for sure the father of a child. Any questions about that? Now, being a biologist, I joke with my wife with biology jokes. I claim the only reason why she crossed with me was so that she could conduct a test cross. Okay, what's a test cross? Talked about it yesterday or Wednesday.
Is it when you're trying to find like the genome?
Okay, she has blood type A. All right. So she's blood type A, but she doesn't know her second allele there. What would you cross somebody like that with if you wanted to conduct a test cross? Okay, homozygous recessive, so actually I have O blood type. Okay. So assuming that all four of our biological children are mine. Okay, we're assuming that. It's not always a good assumption, but hopefully it is in my case. All right. Our first three children had blood type A. Okay. So if probabilities work correctly, at one point I assume that she was probably what? Big A. Okay. But actually our last child that we had has blood type O. Okay, and so obviously my wife is what? She has to be this, correct? Because if she's going to have a child with blood type O, she has to be heterozygous for that allele. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Any questions about that? Yeah?
Isn't it true that O negative can give blood to any other type or O positive?
It's O positive can give blood to anybody that's that has a positive Rh factor.
Okay. Why is it? Just because of the...
It's clotting factor. That's really what they're talking about with positive and negative. It's also a immunological function with A being O blood. Since there's no dominant allele, it doesn't cause an individual with any type of blood to reject their blood. Okay, so the same thing is true with Rh negative. Rh negative is just simply, call it P, for example. Okay, so positive and negative is positive is represented by big P, negative is represented by little p. Okay, so a person who is O negative, this makes it so that the blood doesn't clot. It's a clotting factor that makes it so that it's not attacked from an immunological standpoint. Okay. Because there's no dominant alleles. Yeah.
Well, I've heard that if, say, my wife is B negative and I'm A positive, after the first child, she has to get a shot, otherwise it will kill the baby. Is that true?
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Sometimes what can really be a problem is if a female with negative Rh factor has a child with positive Rh factor, it can cause a problem, whether it's the first child, the second child, third child. That doesn't always happen. So when a I said, not necessarily. There's a possibility, yes, but not necessarily. It's kind of interesting with blood typing. If you tell me your blood type, I can predict where your ancestors came from. Which is kind of interesting. Mr. Steck says he has O blood type. Okay. Want me to predict where your ancestors came from? Probably most of them came from Scandinavia or Western Europe, England, etc. True? Who's A blood type? Okay, those of you with A blood type, I predict your ancestors came from Eastern Europe. Germany, Russia, Poland, that part of the world. Pretty cool, huh? If you're Oriental, you probably have blood type B. Okay. If you're from African descent, you probably have blood type A. For some reason, for a long time, a lot of populations throughout the world, in fact, most populations were very inbred. There wasn't a lot of crossing between cultural groups. Okay. Inbred means that you have close relatives that breed with each other, and that was true throughout the world. And the main reason why there was a lot of inbreeding was because people couldn't move a long ways to find a mate. Okay. It's kind of, my family was one of the first families that settled Ephraim. And if you look at all of the old families in Ephraim and actually throughout San Pete County, I'm related to most of them. Okay. And why is that?
Because we didn't go very far.
Yeah, we didn't go very far to find a mate. But my grandpa, this wasn't that long ago, when my grandpa, he married my grandma, of course, but she was from Moroni and he was from Ephraim. And his dad thought it was nuts to go as far away as Moroni to date a girl. And it kind of was a little bit crazy. My grandpa would tell stories about when he'd go to date my grandma. He'd actually have, it was like an all-day thing. It'd take him all day to ride his horse up and see my grandma and then come back. The way he met her was my grandma went to Snow College for a while, so that's where they met, was me from. But you know, you think about that, it kind of makes sense, right? I mean, you intend to mate with who you meet. You don't mate with people that you don't meet, typically, right? So, and it's a lot harder to move around. A little while ago. Any questions about multiple alleles? Okay. Sometimes, in addition to having multiple alleles, there can be mutations. Mutations are any random inheritable change in the cell's genetic makeup. And mutations are constantly occurring. Some mutations can be good. Some mutations can be bad. Some mutations really don't make a difference. Okay. And every one of you are a result of mutations. You're all mutants if you want to think about it that way. Okay? Some of your mutations really don't make a whole lot of difference in quality of life, whether or not you're smart or dumb or anything else. They're just kind of weird mutations that happen. For example, some of you may have a bump in your nose. Some of you may have a little bump in your chin. Some of you may have, you know, a big toe that's shorter than your other toes, or, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of mutations that are just kind of really don't have, they aren't good or bad, they're just there, right? Okay. Other mutations, some mutations can actually be good. For example, you may have a mutation that makes you faster than everybody else, right? Or you may have a mutation that makes you slightly smarter or able to reason a little bit better. And so some mutations can be good. But actually, some mutations can be lethal or cause death in an individual. Just some examples of some lethal alleles or some lethal mutations. I have a number of them here. Would you expect a lethal mutation or a lethal allele, would you expect it to be a dominant allele or a recessive allele? Okay, why would you say recessive?
Because it doesn't appear that often, so you have to have the double recessive.
Okay, so it doesn't appear that often, that's one thing. Also, if you think about it, if it's dominant, is a dominant individual going to be able to reproduce?
No, they're
going to die, right? Okay, and so it would disappear very, very quickly if it were dominant, unless something happens. And there's actually one of these that's a dominant lethal allele. We'll talk about that exception here in a minute. But most lethal alleles are recessive alleles. Okay, And what tends to happen is when you get really inbred populations, whether it's inbred by choice, by isolation, by because of isolation by choice, for example, in some religious situations, what you tend to have is you tend to have these homozygous recessive traits pop up more commonly than in if populations were just randomly mating or mating across or outside of their own gene pool, I guess you could say. Okay. The first lethal allele I have listed up here is what we call Tay-Sachs disease. Tay-Sachs disease is a disease that is most commonly found in Jewish populations. Okay. Now, are Jewish populations inbred?
Yeah.
A little bit. Why?
They don't marry outside.
Yeah, actually, it's tradition more than anything else, right? I mean, if you're Jewish, your parents want you to do what? Marry somebody else who's Jewish, right? Okay. And so it's kind of a traditional type of a thing. And this is a homozygous recessive lethal allele. And what happens in Tay-Sachs disease is that during development, and actually after the child is born, the immune system starts to attack the person's own body. And this happens usually before the child is about 2 years old. And what it attacks is it attacks the child's nervous system. And so it's a very painful death. Basically, the child goes insane because your body starts to attack its own brain, essentially. And eventually, it's going to cause death. The next one here is probably the most common lethal allele, at least the best known, and that's cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a lethal allele, and what happens in cystic fibrosis is some of the cells in the body, remember we talked about plasma membranes and these gated protein channels, and each time there's a gated protein channel, it's for a different substance. In a person with cystic fibrosis, these gates are broken and left open, I guess you could say, or one ion called a chlorine ion. And so what it does is it messes up the osmotic balance of the cell, and so the cell actually becomes a hypotonic situation in many instances, slightly hypotonic, which wouldn't be all that serious except for the cells in your lungs, when they become hypotonic, then you basically drown in your own body's fluids. Okay? And that's what happens with a very simply, I mean it's more complicated than that, but you know, just to simply explain it, that's what happens with a person with cystic fibrosis. How many of you have heard of cystic fibrosis before? Almost everybody in here? Why?
I have a friend with cystic fibrosis.
Okay, you have a friend with it. Most of you probably heard it when you watch NFL football, because there's a guy named Boomer Esiason that has advertisements all the time because his gunner has cystic fibrosis. So it's become popularized actually a lot more since he became a superstar. Okay. The next one on our list is actually a dominant lethal allele. It's called Huntington's disease. Huntington's disease has a lot of similarities to Tay-Sachs disease. Huntington's disease, however, is a lethal allele, and typically the reason why it can be a lethal allele is because the onset of the disease typically doesn't occur until the person's in their late 20s to early 30s. Okay? And what happens to a person with Huntington's disease is, again, the immune system attacks the nervous system. And these individuals definitely end up going insane. Many times they'll commit suicide because it's so painful, and they realize they are going insane. But the immune system attacks the nervous system. Okay.
Is the only difference between Tay-Sachs and Huntington's the age?
It's not the only difference. They're similar. The mechanisms are a little bit different. Go ahead.
Is Parkinson's a lethal allele?
Parkinson's? Probably not. We don't know for sure. We think it's genetic. But we're not sure. There's some data out there that tends to say that Parkinson's may be environmentally caused. But it's kind of interesting. I had a student that come up to me one time after lecture said, my father just recently passed away from Huntington's disease. What are my chances of getting Huntington's disease? And he actually had, there were six children in his family, okay? I said, okay, let's take best case scenario. The dad is heterozygous for the Huntington's gene, right? Let's assume that his mom does not have Huntington's disease. What are the chances of the children in that family to have Huntington's disease? Yeah, half of the children in that family should have Huntington's disease. Okay. And so there's, I actually recommended that he and his family go see genetic counselors. He actually come back to me later, and he had decided to be tested for the Huntington's disease gene. He had just recently gotten married, and he had the Huntington's disease gene, which means that he was going to die. And so he chose to be sterilized, essentially, so that he wouldn't pass the gene on to future generations. But it's kind of interesting, all of us know we're going to die, right? He just knows he's going to die a lot sooner than most of you. In fact, kind of talking about genetic counseling, there's a big philosophical debate out there as to whether or not we should treat people with cystic fibrosis. There's some ethicists out there that say that we should not treat a person with cystic fibrosis, that we should let them die early on, that we shouldn't allow them to get older. Or if we are going to treat them, that we should sterilize them very early on in life. Yeah.
Multiple sclerosis, MS.
That's a different type of disease, and we don't know if it's genetic. So, does that kind of bother some of you?
I don't agree with that.
Why? I do.
It doesn't bother me, because not all their kids are always going to have it.
Right, but they're going to kill. If they have any offspring, they're going to kill some of their offspring, right? I mean, as sure as if I went up to one of my kids and pulled the trigger and blew their head off, they're going to do that to their kids, right?
Nice.
And if not to their kids, to their grandkids or their great-grandkids. They're going to kill one of their...
That makes sense logically, but I mean, it's people, it's like, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. It's just like parents going through a normal birth if she has AIDS. It's giving the kid AIDS before it even has a chance to fight it, you know what I mean?
Not necessarily. Not always. That's not a sure thing. Yeah.
But when most people with Huntington's, if they knew they had it, decide not to continue having children?
Not always.
You'd be surprised.
You'd be surprised. A lot of people, especially with cystic fibrosis, I mean, everybody with cystic fibrosis knows they have it. But yeah, there's still people with cystic fibrosis who choose to have children. Yeah.
I just don't think it's right, because even if they decide... not to have children, it doesn't matter, because even having children normally, if you don't have the disease, doesn't mean that you're completely in luck that your children aren't going to get something like that. Could be passed down, you don't know when it's just going to appear somewhere. So if you really have any chance of doing it, even if you know you're going to have a child and have that, I mean, it's their decision to have a child. And there could be things to help on in the future.
Yeah, the thing is, though, is you could use that same argument and say, okay, I know that I may get in a car accident and kill one of my children, right? Okay, I mean, that could happen because I drive fast or whatever. And so that's kind of like having a normal childbirth. It's a chancy thing, right? Okay. But if you wanted to use that same argument, then why couldn't I just shoot one of my kids and kill them? I mean, really, you're making the same argument, right? I mean, I'm basically sentencing my child to death either way. I mean, there's no difference there. Yeah.
Question. On Tay-Sachs, just kind of going off the same thing, happens mostly in Jewish populations, so could we just ask all Jewish people to stop having babies so this won't happen?
Theoretically, probably not all Jewish populations. Not all Jewish people, but if they know that they have the allele, there's actually genetics counselors in the Jewish population where you can go get tested for this now. Mm-hmm. And if you are heterozygous, then and you want to mate with somebody, if they're heterozygous, then you use the proper birth control methods. Or you go in and you actually test, you know, have your fertilization take place in a petri dish, and test your offspring to see if they have that lethal allele. If they're homozygous recessive, then you do away with those zygotes. And you only implant zygotes that don't have Tay-Sachs disease. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, then they can pass it on, couldn't they, their child? Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, but if they did the same thing, I mean, it's not a sure thing. If you're heterozygous, it's kind of there's a bigger chance. It's kind of like if I speed, right? I mean, there's a bigger chance that I'm going to kill my kids when they're in the car with me. But if I obey the speed limit, it's kind of that type of a chance, if you wanted to use that analogy. Does that make sense? Whereas if I shoot them, that's a sure thing, correct? Okay. So, but it's really interesting, and I actually took a medical ethics class, and there's some really serious debate out there about what should we do about genetic diseases? Should we treat people with these genetic diseases? Okay.
Isn't that the reason why we have more genetic diseases now than before? Because we're able to treat them so they live longer and have more kids.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big debate. We're causing all of us to pay more for medical care and everything else. I mean, it goes into economics, the whole nine yards. And so that's something you kind of just to, think about. Okay. Brachydactyly is an interesting lethal allele. Brachydactyly is a lethal allele that you can actually determine whether or not you're heterozygous just by looking at your hands. Okay. This is a disease that is most commonly found in the Amish population. All right. Again, another inbred population. In this particular disease, what happens is the child grows, but their skeletal system doesn't grow appropriately with the rest of their body. And so eventually they're going to essentially suffocate themselves. Essentially, they get overweight for their skeleton size. Individuals who are heterozygous for the brachydactyly gene actually lose this joint in their finger. So if you don't have that joint in your finger and you cross with somebody who doesn't have the joint in their finger, you have a 1 in 4 chance of having a child with brachydactyly. Okay. Probably the most common lethal allele in the world is sickle cell anemia. And there's a reason behind that. With sickle cell anemia, there's what we call a heterozygote advantage for that allele. All right? Now, sickle cell anemia, I don't see anybody in here who probably has this gene. Usually it's found in African or descendants of Africans will have this gene. Some populations from Central America. But this particular allele actually has an advantage to it. If you have sickle cell anemia, or if you're little s for sickle cell anemia, what's going to happen is your red blood cells at some point are going to do what we call sickle. Do all of you know what a sickle is? It's like the half moon thing that they used to cut wheat with, all right? So the red blood cells, instead of being round, will actually kind of shrivel up and become sickle shaped, all right? When your red blood cells become sickle-shaped, you cannot carry oxygen on those red blood cells, which is the main thing your red blood cells do. And if you can't carry oxygen, then what happens to your cells? You go anaerobic, right? And you start having lactic acid buildup and everything else. And so individuals with sickle cell anemia are eventually going to die because their red blood cells can't carry oxygen, okay? Now, most of you in here are big S, and I can tell that because most of you are Caucasian, okay? We have one person in here, it looks like, of Oriental descent, and you probably are homozygous dominant as well, okay? And we actually are at a disadvantage to individuals that are heterozygous for the sickle cell disease, or big S, little s, right? And what our big disadvantage is individuals that are heterozygous for the sickle cell anemia gene are resistant to malaria. Malaria is the disease that kills more people in the world today than any other disease, all right, throughout the world. So individuals that are heterozygous for the gene actually are resistant to sickle cell anemia, or resistant to malaria. Every one of you in here are susceptible to malaria, and actually I've had students die from malaria that they've caught as they've traveled throughout the world, okay? So it's kind of interesting. the reason why this gene persists, and we actually don't see it as much in the United States as you see in African populations, when I say in the United States, in African American populations. And the reason why is this. In Africa, if you have two parents that are heterozygous for the sickle cell anemia gene, they survive because they don't get malaria, right? And because they're heterozygous for this allele. Of their children, how many of their children should die? If you're in Central Africa, it's what? That one's going to die and that one's going to die. Why? One's going to die from sickle cell anemia and one's going to die probably from malaria. And so, can you understand why it's such a prominent lethal allele? I mean, there's a reason why it's still out there. In the United States, what happens in African American populations with this cross? This individual tends to do what? Survive, because we don't have malaria here. And so what's happened is, over a long period of time in the United States, is since we have all of these individuals surviving, we tend not to have as much of this allele in the African American population as you do in the African, Black African population. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So there's actually a heterozygote advantage to the sickle cell anemia gene. Any questions? On Wednesday, we'll continue talking about genetics.